השם ישובו ובוציא ימרינה ופתו ישם ישובו ובוציא ימרינה וסיים חסוילם על ראשם סוסוים שמחו יסיגו ונוסו יגי ונחה וסיים חסוילם על ראשם סוסוים שמחו יסיגו ונוסו יגי ונחה וסיים חסוילם על ראשם סוסוים שמחו יסיגו
Well, good evening, and welcome to another 2 hours of Jewish Soul Music. I'm your host, Charlie Bernhardt. Each week, I try to bring you the best in the mixture of American Jewish music, Hasidic, Israeli, whatever, and Chazonis. This evening, I'm so pleased to present to you a very special two-hour session that I had with a dear friend, Bensian Shenker. Those of you who've heard my show over the years know that he has had a great influence on me. I'm a great admirer of Bensian and his wonderful, wonderful singing, particularly of the Mojit's Hasidic selections. It was a week ago, yesterday actually, that I went to his home in Brooklyn and sat there at the table with his brother Chaim, and you will be hearing the interview coming up in a few seconds. Again, I am so pleased that I had this opportunity to have this. For me, it's history. It really is. And he's such a delight. So let's get on with the interview, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. I'm so pleased to be in the presence of a dear friend and someone who I admire so much in terms of everything that he does for Yiddishkeit, for Jewish soul music. It's a pleasure to be with Bensian Shenker. Good day, Bensian.
Good day. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's been a few years, almost 20 years ago, that we did our first interview, and it's time for an update. So for my new listeners who are not familiar with the previous program, let's start from the beginning, Bensian. First of all, tell us, I'm curious, where were you born?
Okay. I was born in the USA, in Brooklyn, New York.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
And in Williamsburg, of all places. Would you believe it? South First Street, to be exact.
Really? Really?
That's real Williamsburg.
Uh-huh. And where did you have your early education?
My early education, when I started going to school, it was to the yeshiva. It was the Yeshiva Torah Vadas, which was, that was situated in Williamsburg at the time.
Uh-huh.
And although I think the first class I went to, I think I was too young to be able to walk. My mother at that time was not able to devote time to taking me there, so I think I went to a public school.
Really?
First grade, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But that was only for a short while, and later, of course, she registered me into the Yeshiva Torah Vadas, where my older brother had been going to already, and that's where I got my Jewish education. Of course, the Torah Vadas was also a secular school, and they had the English department there also, and it was a long day at that time for young children.
Uh-huh.
We didn't get home until about 5 o'clock at night. You know, we went there at 9 o'clock in the morning, and most cases we ate lunch in the yeshiva, and then we had the English studies in the afternoon. So, and by the time we were finished, it was like 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Now, what was your upbringing, Mojits? Were you raised in a Mojits household?
No, that came much, much later.
Uh-huh.
My father was very Hasidic oriented, and he knew about Majus. He lived in a small village, actually, which wasn't too far, with the same county, as they say, as Majus was.
In Poland?
In Poland, yeah.
Poland,
But he was very much, he knew about Majus. In fact, in his town, there was a gentleman that became, married a girl from his town who came from Majus. And he was also a menagin, a very good singer. So he used to bring the nagunim from Majus to that town. My father actually knew quite a bit of the nagunim going back, the early nagunim coming from the first Majus Rebbe. So, and he would sing it for us very, very occasionally. He wasn't the greatest singer, my father, but he knew how to be, was able to sing a ding. And so I knew about Majus even as a child, actually. Of course, later on, when the Rebbe actually came to America as a refugee, then I got to know him a little more. But I was knowledgeable about the Chassidus and everything else. But I went to the Yeshiva Torah Adas, which was the yeshiva in Williamsburg at that time. And what is very interesting, as far as what connection I have with music, my mother used to tell me this, that as a young child, I must be probably about 2 or 3 years old, if she ever wanted me to keep me quiet, she knew that I was not very interested in any toys. She would sit me down in front of the Victrola. You know what a Victrola is?
That's how it all started for me, because my first hobby was collecting old Victrolas.
She would sit me down to the Victrola and give me a batch of records.
Yes.
That included Yosela and Hirschman and Kvartman.
Right.
And I would just keep on cranking up the Victrola. Right. We had there wasn't electricity. The Victrolas weren't electrified at that time.
Right, they were springs, run by springs, yes.
We used to crank it up like a Ford, you know, Ford
yes.
The T-model that they used to crank up to get it going. So I would crank it up, then I would put on a record, and I was very much into Yosela. I've loved Yosela.
Yes.
In fact, I knew L'chai Neshama probably when I was about 4 years old. I was able to sing it.
Really?
And my mother would take me out into the street, and they would say, the neighbors would say, Benele, sing L'chai Neshama, and I would do it. I don't remember this. She told me this. Though.
Really? Wow.
And you know what? I actually heard Yosela in person. You wouldn't believe it. It must have been probably the 1930 or 31.
I didn't think you were that old, that's it.
I was about 4 or 5 or 6 years old.
Right.
Yosela davened, gave a Shabbos, a benefit for Yeshiva Torah Adas. He davened in Williamsburg. And my mother knew that that's going for me. It was like, that was like icon.
Wow,
you know?
Wow.
She took me there, and I remember very vividly. I was up in the gallery, and I was able to see him perfectly. He was a very good-looking man, a beautiful, nice, reddish type of beard, and a short fellow. He wore a long
waistcoat,
a kaftan, like, you know. And I heard him in person. I mean, I can't say I remember exactly what he sounded like, but this was like the biggest treat I could have possibly have had.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So you knew at an early age that music was in your life.
I got into very much into Chazonis at the time, and of course we davened in the Hasidic Shtibulich, which they did a lot of singing. So I knew only the Gunim of that era.
Right. Which Hasidic groups?
There was more of a Galiciana. It wasn't Polish. It was like. They called him the Ropchitz. Ropchitz was a Galician Chassidus. He had the offshoots of Ropchitz, Greg, Jikov, and Rozvedov, Melitz. those are the Gunim that I knew as a child. And later on, when we moved to a different neighborhood, we'd have it in a Polish table there. I started hearing a lot of Majus in the Gunim before I even knew the Majus Rebbe, even.
We have a recording of you at a rather young age.
Let me get to that. You want to speak about the lady as when I actually joined a choir.
Oh, no, so I don't want to skip. I was skipping, so let's
it's
move
okay,
on.
Yeah.
No. I didn't know where we were.
Yeah, you were about 12 years old. We lived that time in Betzai. And we lived in this Polish table, and there was a Shabbos, and there was a bar mitzvah there, and the... whoever was davening sang a niggun, and I sang along with him. And one of the people that was invited to the bar mitzvah was cantor Yeshua Weiser. He came there as a friend of the family, obviously, and he heard me singing there, and liked what he heard. I was about 12 years old that time, and he came over to me after davening and said, "I like the way you sing." He says, "Can I speak to your father?" So I called my father over, and he said, he spoke in Yiddish, of course. He says, "I really would like to have this boy in my choir. I hear he has a beautiful voice." My father says, "I don't think it's going to go. I'm not for this kid. Sending a kid into a choir, you know, you have to go away from the house. You have to go daven
travel
Shabbosim or Yom Tovim, and it's not for me," he says. So he, that was it. Then it seems that he didn't give up. He came to my house to speak to my mother and my father at the same time, and they told him why they don't want to have me there, because they thought it was not a good education for a young boy, an impressive boy. And he promised, he says, "One thing I can tell you, and I'll take care of him. I'll make sure that I know that the people in the choir are not usually the greatest tzaddikim, but I'll make sure that he stays in the house of the rabbi or the one of the prominent Jews davening in the shul." He gave a lot of promises, and seems my parents succumbed to those promises, and I did join the choir.
Really?
And it's very interesting. He had in his choir, not at that time, right? He had left the choir. Richard Tucker was one of his one of the choir boys.
Really?
When he already was singing as a tenor. He started off as an alto, and then later sang as a tenor. But he at that point already left and was studying here. He was studying opera, studying Chazonis. Uh-huh. And Richard Tucker studied Chazonis with the Wiser, incidentally.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
By the way, I just came from Crown Heights, and I know that Tucker was the cousin at the Brooklyn Jewish Center in those days. And,
it's interesting, but I... Huh?
Brooklyn Jewish Center.
Anyway, speaking about that, my father was a member for the facilities they had there. They had a Schwitz there.
So we
used to go there Thursday nights. I once walked into the lobby, and there was Richard Tucker walking around.
Uh-huh.
And he looked, and I walked over, and I say shalom. And he looks at me, he says, "I know you. Where do I know you from?" So I said, "Probably from Yeshua Weiser." He says, "Yeah, oh, you're the kid that did the solos there." Because he once came to one of the rehearsals. And
really?
He says, so what are you doing now? I said, "I'm not doing much in music, but..." But he was very friendly, very, very nice. And in 1938, that's right after my bar mitzvah, Weiser decided to take me to a studio to record one of his songs. The Alte Chazen, that was one of his songs. I'm not sure whether that song was ever recorded by any of the Chazonim. I think Hirschman used to record some of his stuff. Hirschman did Akavia, I know he did, for Weiser's. He did have some of his stuff recorded, but I don't know if they ever did the Alte Chazen.
This was recorded when you were 13 years old.
Yeah.
And it's the Alte Chazen. It was a composition written by...
By Yeshua Weiser. He wrote the lyrics too.
Okay, here we go.
Crying
Seeing that was such a beautiful piece, the Alter Chazan. During that period, you were involved with Chazonis?
Not Chazonis per se, but I was involved with music. I mean, I was studying music.
Okay.
Besides the fact that I was very close to Cantor Weiser, and I used to be in his house almost every other day, practically. You know, I listened to the way he did a lot of teaching of Chazonis. With many, many different Chazanim. I mentioned Richard Tucker, of course.
Right.
And I used to very often observe those lessons that he did. And he was always very friendly to me, and if I had any kind of musical question, he was always ready to answer it. However, I couldn't see him as being my teacher in music, because he was too involved in his Chazonis at the time to be able to give me time, enough time for studying music theory and composition and harmony and piano. So I decided at that time, Simo Silbermans, who lived in Williamsburg at the time, was doing that privately, in private students, and I became one of his students. And for about 2 years, going like from 39 on to about 41, I studied with him, and I learned how to read and write.
Really,
music. That's the way I got really into the whole music field.
Now, did you do some presentations on the radio?
At the same time, I had a program on. There were many Jewish radio stations at the time.
Uh-huh.
Everybody thinks that WEVD was the only one. It's not so. In Brooklyn, downtown Brooklyn, there must be at least three or four stations that were doing Jewish music. Very interesting. And somehow or other, they found out about me. I don't know exactly how it happened, but it was. And I had my own radio program. And to me, it's very interesting that I had to leave classes in the yeshiva. I had a program on Sunday at 12 o'clock. And I went to the yeshiva on Sunday morning, and I told the Rebbe that I have a radio program and I have to leave about 11 o'clock. So he says, I can't give you permission. You have to go to the principal. And that was Rabbi Mendelowitz. He was the Menahel. So I knew it's going to be a hurdle. I knew it wasn't such a simple thing to be able to get permission to leave the classes and go to the radio. So I remember speaking to him, and he was very, very knowledgeable. First, he knew that I was into music.
Yes.
And he himself enjoyed music very much.
That helps.
That helped a lot. And he told me, you know, he asked me to give you permission to do something which I really wouldn't like to do, he says. But I want you to know one thing. Don't have anything to do with the people around there. Just come back to school as soon as you finish.
Oh, okay.
For the afternoon session. And I promised that's what I would do.
So
my Rebbe at that time was Rabbi Palm, who later became the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva.
Uh-huh.
This was his first class. He started off by teaching the first class in the Mesifta, in the high school department. And he later managed to become the Rosh Yeshiva of the whole Yeshiva later on.
Really?
So when I used to meet him later on years, he used to always remind me of this. He says, I remember you in my class, and you had to get permission to go to sing on the radio. And I couldn't give it to you. And Rabbi Mendel was going to give it to you. So it's something very interesting.
Now, the show itself, you had someone on the piano?
I had an accompanist. I would have to. The fact is that Weiser was the one who used to prepare me for these radio programs.
Right.
He would tell me, he gave me the repertoire, he gave me the songs I should sing. And he gave a lot of his time just that I should succeed in that, what I was doing. Later on, the program switched about 6 o'clock in the evening, so I had no problem in getting going out of school.
But this is all pre-Mudgets.
All pre-Mudgets.
So you were not singing what we...
No, what you hear now, I was singing Yiddish songs mostly.
Oh, and not Chazonis and Yiddish?
Chazonis, some of Weiser's Chazonis pieces.
Right.
And songs, not Dafke, the ones that he wrote, but he gave me a Shalom Sekunda song.
Okay.
He told me to go into Metro Music, buy this and this and that, gave me a whole list of things I should buy.
Okay.
And he would prepare me for it.
Okay, so that was a whole separate phase of your life.
A separate phase of my life.
Uh-huh. So how long did that...
The Rebbe arrived in New York in the end of 1940.
So you were 15 years old at the
time.
Yeah,
exactly.
And how did you come to...
And being that we knew who the Rebbe was and he's such a musical person, I was very interested in getting to know him.
Right.
So the first appearance was Parshas Noach. Incidentally, that was yesterday's Parshas.
Yes.
Going back over 70 years already.
Yes.
It's 1940 or so.
71
years. So I remember we dived that time in a Polish steeple, and somebody sort of organized a whole group of people walking down to Wiesberg from DeKalb Avenue in Bedford-Stuyvesant,
right,
which wasn't that too far really, and to observe that particular tish, and it was very fascinating. But I didn't get really to know the Rebbe until a couple of months later, when the Rebbe was invited to the Bedford-Stuyvesant area. There was a big shul called Van Buren Street Shul. I think Moshe Kusavitsky davened there when he was in America the first time in 1938. He came here and that was one of the shuls that he davened in. Moshe Genshev was the chazan there.
Oh really?
Yeah, I used to go to hear him. It was every 2 weeks. I used to go to hear.
Wow.
He was also, and he was a young man at that time, but very, very good. He was excellent.
Genshev,
yes.
Yeah.
In fact, Weiser used to say, listen to Genshev. He's a good man. Weiser himself used to come to listen to someone very often.
Well, just as an aside, last week I did a special on Genshev. It was 60 years, his 60th year in Chazanis. And there was a big concert in New York City. And he sang actually at the age of 83, which was, he still was okay, Genshev.
Yeah, he lived a ripe old age, and he was in the 90s when he passed away. Yeah,
so you knew...
I didn't have any personal relationship with Genshev. I was a young kid. Right. I mean, I just came to listen to him because I knew that this is genuine, you know, it's a real Chazanis. And at that time, as I said, the Rebbe arrived, and the shul that... the Van Buren Street shul had a lot of Polish Jews there that knew about Mudgets, and they invited the Rebbe for a Shabbos there. And the Rebbe actually asked my father to join him in a meal on Shabbos afternoon. And my father told his sons, my brother and myself, to go home, make Kiddush my mother, and then come back. When I came back, there was like a, back in the Rebbe's chair, there was a couch that I sat down on, and I found a book called L'Chassidim Mizmor. The book written by a fellow named Geshuri. in Yishalayim. And this book had actually a biography of the Rebbe. Not only of the Rebbe, had of other musical...
In Hebrew?
In Hebrew, yeah. Uh-huh. And in fact, he had biographies of the Babava Rebbe, that's the old Babava Rebbe, the one from in Poland, who also was very musical. In other words, the book was based on the musicality of different Rebbeim.
Okay.
And also he had notations there of the Rebbe's music. So I started looking into it, and I started singing it to myself, because I was able to read music at the time. And the Rebbe picked it up, obviously, and he turned around and says, "Can't find an nothing. You know how to read the notes?" Because I was well, 15. I was very short. I looked very young, much younger than my age.
Uh-huh.
So I said, I was very modest. Also, I said, "Abyssal, Lomachan." He says, "He wanted to hear." So I kept on going, and I started singing a lot of his Lagunim, and he was fascinated. So later, he actually asked me to sing Shira Malos. So I sang one of the Lagunim that I knew was his. That came here before the war, that the Lubavitcher brought it over. The Lubavitchers, actually, they had a yeshiva in the same town that where the Rebbe lived, in Otwock, in Poland. And they used to come to the Rebbe's station, the Lubavitcher. And they brought back an egon of his, and I sang that egon for Shira Malos. But I was shaking like a leaf, I was a young kid. So started singing, I started speeding it up, So when I finished, he said, "How'd you know this egon?" So I said that they brought over, this is something that they brought in the last year or so from Poland. He was very surprised that it got to America that fast. Then he says, when you sing a Negan, you got to sing, not like a choo-choo train. Choo-choo-choo-choo-choo. You start off slow and then you got to go. You got to sing like a tick-tock, 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 like a clock. So that's my first lesson I got in Mudges.
I was curious, the Tish, were there? Was there a big
crowd? This was in a private house.
Oh, okay.
There was only about a minion over there.
Oh, okay. I was just trying to visualize.
This was all very, very private. Of course, after that,
it was beshared that you should be.
Yeah,
there
that moment, we see that all the everything is beshared. The rest, I'd say, is history.
Yes.
I started.
They say there are no accidents, of course.
First of all, the Rebbe needed it was to him it was like a find to have somebody that he can sing for, and I can notate it, actually. I mean, I was able to notate if he had anything.
At what point did you start notating?
The same year that I met him, I became very close. I used to walk down every Shabbos to Shalosh Shudas. It wasn't a great walk. It was from Beit Stuyvesant to... Later, we moved to Crown Heights. I walked every Shabbos from Crown Heights also. Crown Heights is over an hour walk. And to go further, my brother later married his daughter, Not this one, not my older brother. He's not around anymore.
Sorry.
Oliver Shalom. This was something that... Everything is about Sharet.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure. So you were notating the music, and you were singing and with him. Did you sing along with him, by the way?
Not only did I notate, but I even brought down Weiser to do notations of the very complicated Nagunim.
Uh-huh.
Weiser was felt great that I brought him into the picture, And he was able to write he used to write chazonis and speak on the phone at the same time. I mean, it's something that I don't know how many people could do that.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, he was very prolific. I mean, he also was a composer a lot of his stuff has been sung in choirs and
very familiar name.
And he was both a chazan and a choir leader, and that's very, you usually don't find that. Only going back to Zeidel Rovne, Nisi Belzo, those were the people that he was not from that school, actually.
Right.
He used to use a lot of Zeidel Rovne's compositions in with his choir too. I'll tell you one little incident with Weiser that I had. He did a concert in Brownsville at one time, and David Reutman was the featured chazan at the time. I'm sure you heard
of
David Reutman.
Of course.
And Reutman was sitting up on the dais over there, and then Weiser sang, the choir sang Halleluka of the Hallel, and I had a solo over there, Mikimi Meofa Dol. And this was my first appearance at a concert with Weiser, after I joined the choir. And as I was singing, Reutman gets up from his seat and wants to get a good look at this kid that's singing. Took a good square look at me. And then after the concert was over, the Rebbe comes over to Weiser, Yeshike, there the Engel was a gezing mikimi. See, brings me over. So he gives me a big knip and beckle, you know, and says, "Das ois wachsen a lot. You know, I know it'll become something." He gave me a bracha at the time.
Well, it was a good bracha for sure. Then, just as an aside, I love choirs, and I have always, when you study the great Chazanim from the past, in particular from the Golden Era, their biographies are always that they all sang in choirs.
Every one of them.
And I bemoan the fact that we don't have choirs and that the young kids don't have an opportunity. Yes, there are some boys' choirs here and there, but they're not doing Chazanis.
They're doing mostly songs that the... You have the Miami. So yes, he composes his own songs.
Right, but I feel that that could be a great.
That's really part of Chazonis. Part of Chazonis, actually. I mean, we see a renaissance of Chazonis, which I think you're responsible for, also. Definitely, I consider you being very responsible for the renaissance that we have now.
Thank you.
There's no doubt about. I mean, you brought the health card into the.
Yes, it's so true that it's so important to get them at a young age. It's also they believe what they're singing. You catch them at the young age. It's part of their neshama.
Right. That's right.
Somebody at the age of 30 decides I want to be a chazan, and they don't have the. They weren't raised with it. I mean, it's not that it's impossible.
They weren't raised in that atmosphere.
Right. So So when did you start recording at that time? What was the evolution from?
No, that came much, much later.
Okay, so now you're notating for the Rabbi Shaul.
I was like the official musical secretary, put it that way.
Okay, and how long did that go on?
Well, that went on until he left America in 1947.
Oh, really?
I mean, I was very much involved. In fact, they used to put out every year like a book. Kuntres, they called it. It wasn't the hardcover book. It was like where he had the things that he did, the Torah that he said, and also the Negunim that he composed. And I was one that made sure that the Negunim were notated and printed. I was in charge of that.
Right.
So we have for 7 years, we have every year, we have seven different books. We have the Negunim that he composed here in America,
mm-hmm.
and some that he did yet in Poland that were very well known. So we had, as I said, the more complicated ones I would ask Weiser to notate, because I didn't want to take the responsibility, because there's a lot of coloratura on it, you know, which I felt Weiser would do much better than I would.
I see.
And Weiser was the one that actually notated the very famous song, which takes about 25 minutes to sing, that the Rebbe's father composed during an operation. This is a famous story. He had a foot amputated, and he didn't take anesthesia. And he composed called Eskor Lekim Ve'Moya. It's what we say it by Anila, Yom Kippur. Just a few words. He has a composition of 36 parts. It's very difficult for me to believe that he did the whole thing during operation. It's very possible that there were only parts of it were done. I mean, I it's very hard for me to, being in the composition business,
yes.
I know it's not a simple thing to be able to compose
right.
in such a situation also.
Maybe a naive question, but in the 40s, there were, when the Rebbe sang, it wasn't being recorded.
No, they weren't recording it.
This is for listeners who don't even know that we were raised without television, you know. So there were no tape recorders. I remember a wire recording, a tape recorder that came out in the late 40s. It was a miracle to just hear the
somebody
voice.
Somebody recorded the Rebbe before he left for Israel on a wire recording.
Wire, yes.
Singing the Eskra.
Uh-huh.
And by the end, the thing just
snapped,
broke, you know, and that was the end of it.
Okay, so
we see that obviously wasn't destined to be recorded. You know?
Right, right.
I sing it every year at the Yahrzeit.
Really?
Really. It's a we don't sing it during the day. We don't sing it at all, practically. It was the composer insisted that he doesn't want it to be spread around for the goyim. He wanted it to be something only for
understood.
For our own
understood.
People.
Understood. So what was in the, that was your early phase of Mojits, yeah. Which was, and you were singing with him also at the
well,
time?
Well, when he was only, choir. The choir. We didn't have any official choir, uh-huh. But when he davened the Yom Yomerom, I was very, very, I participated in the, we had a voluntary choir, put it, that right. Wasn't, didn't rehearse, but he used to get us together before Yom Tov. In fact, the first year before he started davening, the first Rosh Hashanah, he called about, I must have had 8 or 9 boys to familiarize us with the Nusach, what he was, how he davened, because we never heard it the way he davened, and certain Nugunim that he sang, which we became familiar with. And then he used to compose every year a new Nugunim. Uh-huh. So we would pick it up, they would call me in, let's say, a few days before Rosh Hashanah and said, I composed a new Nugunim for Michal Kilchayim. He wanted me to notate it for number one. And so of course, once I notated it, I got the few boys together, and we learned it, you know, and we were able to go to help him and sing along with him as he sang it.
Well, that's it. What was going on in your life during that period? I mean, were you studying or?
I was still in yeshiva, but I started composing on my own.
Okay.
As of course, it definitely was inspired by the Rebbe's composition. Right. I have a lot of inspiration coming from Rebbe's composition. I started composing actually in 1941. I started composing. In 1943, I was asked to join a seminar that we had, a summer seminar in Spring Valley that Rabbi Mendelovitz put together. This is supposed to be for future educators, pedagogues. Why he called me, I really don't know, because I didn't think I was going to be an educator. But I think he called me because he needed somebody to sing for the Olam.
Oh, okay.
He wanted somebody to daven and sing. I mean, that's the only way I figured it out. And as I was there, I had a very good friend. We went to yeshiva together, who is now one of the most prominent rabbis in Borough Park, Rabbi Moshe Wolfson. I don't know if you heard the name. He has a congregation that has about 300 congregants davening there every Shabbos. He's actually like a Rebbe in his own right. Uh-huh. And we were very, very close. We were in the same class in the yeshiva. And I was once took a walk together in Spring Valley. And as we were walking, I was singing a melody for myself without words.
sounds a little familiar.
he says, What is that? I said, it's something I just composed. In fact, I can't remember whether it was composed on the spot as we were walking or something that I composed already, and I was just like singing for him. And he listens to it and says, wow, that's great. You know what that would be good for? It was his idea.
Wow.
Okay. I wonder if he remembers this, actually. I mean, I remember it. And this became a very popular melody.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Why don't we listen to it right now? Okay. And
that was 1943.
So this is Hamavdil. Hamavdil ben koidesh lechoy Ui chatu yiseinu hoyim choy Zareinu vichasveinu Yade bekachoy Yichakoy chovim Pahatloiko Uyoy pono kitzeil Toime Ekro keilo laigo Ime Uyoy mashoy Yeah.
besach mi shara min ota shara
That Hamav deal is so beautiful. The Rebbe was here in the country during the Holocaust, the Shoah. Were there any selections that he composed that were influenced by that?
Yes, definitely. There are quite a few of the tefillos that deal with the situation of that the Jews were in that time, like Habet Mishamayim Arei, Shomer Yisrael, Kadesh HaShimcha, then Lolem Aneinu, which came later. These are songs that the Rebbe composed that were definitely connected with what was going on in Europe. The only one that I know that was actually recorded, I recorded at one point Habet Mishamayim, and the Shomer Yisrael was recorded by cantor Binyamin Unger of Tel Aviv, the chief cantor of the great shul on Allenby in Tel Aviv. Otherwise, I don't know if there are any recordings of the other ones, but those are the nigunim that we sung in that era. I would like to say something about the famous Ani Mamin, which everybody knows. In 1945, at some kind of simcha that we had in the shul, I think it was a bris or a pidyon haben of one of the Rebbe's grandchildren. He had a few of the rabbis that came to the bris, like the Stolner Rebbe, the Kapishnitzer Rebbe, and Rav Yitzhak Huttner, the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Chaim in Berlin. And they all came upstairs in this room after the bris, to have like sort of a little gathering where they spoke to each one, had something to say. And the Rebbe said he just that week received a letter from somebody in Switzerland. I don't remember the name. And he opened up the letter and it said, this is in reference to one of his chassidim by the name of Fastag from Warsaw, who was one of the composers in Europe, one of the people that composed quite a bit of Nagunim that the Rebbe used to sing actually himself. And this fellow was taken to Treblinka, and on the way there, he sang a nigun that he had composed for the words Ani Mamin, and wanted to teach it to the people because they knew where they were going at that time. And he started singing it, and the Olim started singing along with him. And then he said, if anybody in this freight car manages to survive, I would appreciate very much if you can get this nigun to my Rebbe who is in America right now. And this is all in this letter from Switzerland. I have a feeling that it was a cousin of Fastag, because there was a Fastag living in Zurich at that time. I can't say for sure, but he also sent along the notation of the nigun. And that piece of paper. And the Rebbe says, Ben Zion, read it. And I read it I can say there was no dry eye in that room at that time as I read it. It was the first time this nigun ever was sung in America. And it later became worldwide famous. I mean, it's...
Yes.
And the Rebbe himself started singing it at every occasion, wherever he was called. If he was, I remember he was in the Berachut Sabayis of the Lubavitch Yeshiva on a Motzei Shabbos. It was probably a few weeks after this incident, and they asked him to say a few words. After he finished, saying what he wanted to say, he started singing Ani Mamin.
For some of my listeners who are not familiar with that particular tune, just give us the first opening.
Ani Mamin, Ani Mamin, Ani Mamin, Be'emuna Shleimo, Be'vias HaMashiach.
Wonderful. That it's always so touching.
You know what? It's interesting in budgets in Israel now, when they have the Hakofa Shniyos, they only have one day Yom Tov. We know that. And the Hakofa Sador, the Shmini Atzeres and Simchas Torah is rolled into one day.
Uh-huh.
But then Motzoi Simchas Torah, the night after, they have a Hakofa Shniyos. They make a Hakofa when they have a band playing. This is something that's been becoming very, very popular in Israel.
Really?
A lot of people are doing the same thing. Majus has been doing this for years already. When they live in Tel Aviv, now in Bnei Brak. So they always sing the Ani Mamin by one of the Hakofas.
Wow.
And it's such a...
stirring. It touches the soul.
I mean, people here there come to dance and sing, but when they come to that part,
yes,
you know, everything, all the dancing stops. You know.
Okay, so now we're up to 47 when the Rebbe left.
Left America, went to Israel.
What was your next stage of the Ben Zion Shenker Mudget story?
I'll tell you why. I myself composed many, many nigunim in that era. Uh-huh. A lot of the things that later I put into the recordings. I mean, I in the 40s, I have a wealth of compositions I did myself. Many of them have never been recorded. And some of them I'd like to see recorded. I mean, if it's still possible. I mean, I don't have the strength to do it, you know. But maybe I
have to do it. You must.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to do right now. That actually, I do have private recordings of them. I maybe want to, and some of them are coming out. Came out to be pretty nice. I did it privately in my own home, and yet with the technology we have today, they can be brought out in a magnificent way.
Yes.
And I'm looking to do some of these things.
Now,
I get to another stage a little further on where I can show you what has been done
for
some of my private recordings.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to discuss...
actually, we're going to go to the 1956, really. That's when I recorded my first commercial recording called Majus Malafa Malka.
Okay. It's a short, it's a small record.
It was a 10-inch record at the time.
I mentioned, I had many requests, and I have one CD copy that I just... keep making duplicates. Anybody wants that Malava Malka?
That's, of course, not available. I have a copy of it also.
I should mention this because maybe there's copyrights, but I'm sure you don't mind.
What happened with the Malava Malka, I made another version of it 2 years later in 12-inch.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. Which now is incorporated in the CDs that we have. Yeah. So that I also have the Amavdal on that recording.
Yes,
that's what you played before. There are other Nigunim that from that recording, but I'm not. I'm going to go a little further to 1960, where we put out a recording of Mojits that had a few things I'd like you to illustrate: Mechal Kilchaim and the Kaddish Nigun. I want you to have the Kaddish is a fast. Moving Nigun for the Kaddish that we say after the Tfilos of Rosh Hashanah. When we finish Rosh Hashanah, then we have a fast moving Nigun that we use for Kaddish. I mean, it sounds a little, but Chassidim do sing by every end of Tfilo, we sing a fast Nigun.
Well, tell us the background about Mechal Kilchaim.
Yeah.
What's the background of okay. Was that one of your first?
That was a. I would say the first super recording that we had. We went into a very, very fancy studio, and you know that time when you did the recording, it wasn't like today where you do a patch here and a patch there. There you came and it was like a live concert. Yes. Actually, we had an orchestra and a choir,
really,
and soloists and everything else, all doing it, all recording at the same time. It wasn't where like today where you do a piece in one studio and the orchestra in one studio and the choir in another studio.
Was Pasternak involved?
Pasternak was involved with that. Involved with Pasternak was led the choir.
What a great guy!
Yeah. He was the he started off singing in the choir that on the first Malava Malka record. That's where we started off.
I didn't realize
he was a congregant of ours. He died in our shul in Crown Heights. That's how we got the group together.
Interesting. So let's hear Mechal Kilchaim.
Mechal Kilchaim, yeah.
La-yi-di-di-da, la-yi-di-di-da, Michal Kilchaim, Chaim Mechesed, Chaim Eizim, Rachamim
Well, this brings to the end our first hour of the interview that I had with Bensian Schenker a week ago yesterday at his home in Brooklyn. Stay tuned for the second hour of this wonderful session that I had with our dear friend Bensian Schenker. Here in the background, we just hear a little bit of Bechuk HaSan.
Yo was is ke gi bair, I love the song.